Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running. It's about a minute and a half past the hour on this, the 8th day of September 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, in fact, where we live. I am told that we are firing on all engines. That is, to wit, streaming live at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Roku, Stitcher, TuneIn, and, of course, always, because as has been noted previously by Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy, HeadOn.live, that thing, as Steve notes, is bulletproof. I mean, bulletproof is like, you know, it's a colloquialism. Don't shoot. For God's sakes, don't shoot. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And we come to this, the end of the first full week of September. It's a listener-supported broadcast. We don't have any corporate sponsors. So we have to depend on the kindness of the community to keep everything going here. And, to end the week, it looks like we're going to have to pull off one of those little Friday on the front porch, human-made miracles. Because we've got $350 to raise. We pulled up a little short last night. But like I said, I try always to mention and thank our subscribers. In point of fact, thank you very kindly to Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. And thank you very kindly to Christopher. Nancy in Virginia, Christopher in Oregon. Thank you very much to Dwayne in PA. And to Marsha in Oregon. And Tom. Thank you, Tom, in Pennsylvania. So thanks to them, it is not as brutal as it would have been. And and thank you, Bob, in Winston-Salem. Thank you very, very, very kindly, one and all. And that means we've only got $350 to raise this evening. So that's a big deal. It could have been considerably worse. If you would like to become a subscriber, it's very easy, and it'll get you a bumper sticker or two. Yay! Go over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click that little box under the Contribute tab that says "Make this a recurring monthly donation," and it'll come out on the same day of the month every month. If you don't like working with PayPal, you can always go to patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and you can subscribe there. And it'll come out on the first day of the month, every month. Right now, Well, like I've said before, the ultimate goal is to get 400 subscribers at $10 a month, and then I don't do this anymore. Yay! And right now we don't even have 100. So sorry, but we don't. But even if we could take the number of subscribers that we have at Patreon, which is 13, and get that up to 100, it would be. We'd have something north of a quarter of the fundraising goal for any given month taken care of, which would be awesome. But thank you very kindly, one and all, for your ongoing support. Now we just need 10 folks at $35, or 35 people at $10, or one at $350, or oh dear God, two at $175, or four, oh, Jesus, 175, 75, 87, 50, something like that. You know how it is with me and the ciphering. But that's what it takes. Although, I do want to encourage you, one and all, to maybe consider augmenting your lifestyle with OMG Okra. OMG Okra. It's a new vegetable nutritional supplement proprietarily and exclusively from Horn Labs, Head On Labs. That's right. OMG Okra will have you saying, OMG Okra. It contains the nutritional value of 500 okra pods in every capsule. That's right, the fiber, the minerals, the vitamins, and I mean, you know what okra looks like, right? Yeah. That's why you'll go to the shower one morning, guys, and you'll go, OMG, okra, OMG okra, only from the Horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It is Friday on the front porch. That means here in about 53 minutes or so, I'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Well, see, that's okay. That's okay. Marty says, sorry, not an okra fan. Well, OMG Okra is for you, Marty. Because, yeah, there are a lot of people out there that don't get into okra. You know, if it's boiled, it's kind of slimy. Maybe you don't want to go in for all the grease that comes with having it deep fried. Well, just a handful of OMG okra, and you can satisfy your nutritional okra needs without ever knowing you're eating okra. OMG okra, only from Horn Labs. How about that? Yes, indeed. For only $29.95 for a 30-day supply, you can have OMG okra every day. And golly, what a bargain. If you order right now, you'll get two bottles of OMG okra for only $60. Order right now, and as an introductory special, you can have three bottles of OMG okra for only $90. Mm-hmm. Yes, it certainly it does. Absolutely, Marty. Marty asking, OMG okra is for me? Does it have electrolytes? Of course it has electrolytes. It has everything. Well, not everything. It is, after all, gluten-free. Yeah. No, okay, so now it's 10 minutes past the hour. And here in about 50 minutes or so, I'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, the Horn Skype chat group, which convenes about this time every week for a rousing conversation on many, many, many different topics. And we'll see what those topics. Well, naturally, yes, Labor Man, absolutely. OMG Okra will maintain your boner. Like I said, did you ever look at okra? Ah, come on. and the ladies will love you for it. Yeah, or the guys. Yeah, I mean, just kind of depends on which way you go in that regard. OMG okra is for everybody. Stamina, vitality, a twinkle in your eye, a spring in your step. OMG okra, only from Horn Lab. Of course, Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, obviously, Marty hasn't tried battered deep-fried okra. Make a Brother Deacon want to break a stained glass window, especially one with Stonewall Jackson or Robert E. Lee in it. Darn Skippy. And you know, there's deep-fried okra goodness in every OMG okra capsule. Yes. So now it's 11 minutes past the hour. And I think we've pretty well worked OMG okra over thoroughly. But there's a lot to talk about. Naturally, the hurricane situation remains in the forefront of many people's minds, and many of us have people to worry about. In the hurricane evacuation zone, as it draws nearer, 20-foot storm surge expected in the Bahamas, and depending on where on the southern tip of the Florida Peninsula one is, the storm surge can be 10 or more feet. And the weird thing is it wraps all the way from the east side all the way around to the west side of Florida, from north of Miami all the way to Fort Myers. Early cowbell for Michael in Madison. Stop telling us how to maintain our boners, Bob! OMG okra. Only if you want to control, never mind. But before we get into the substance of the conversation this evening, as I throw some topics out on the table for consideration, this little tidbit. You remember the other day when the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, said that Irma was a hoax designed to let liberals browbeat us all over fake climate change? As our buddy the Angry Indian reminds me, Flush wasn't live today. No. The Southern Command didn't have the on-air light on it. Instead, he got some other right-wing POS to fill in for him. Why? Because Rush Limbaugh ran away from the liberal hoax. Run, Rush, run. It's a little like watching Jabba the Hutt run. You really didn't want to see it. No, he got in the Gulfstream 5 and he flew away to safety. Why didn't you stay and ride out the hoax there? You could have stored a whole lot of fresh water in that pit where you usually keep Mrs. Limbaugh, Rush. Don't know. And I'd still like an answer, and I do not have it. I still would like to know whether or not the American people will have a right to know how much Donald Trump clears on having had his mansion in St. Martin's flattened. And, of course, I'm also the only person out there of which I'm aware. I mean, I don't sit down and listen to a lot of radio every day. but I follow a lot of social media. And I'm the only person thus far who has pointed out that maybe Geezer Disgustus was so eager to get the Harvey relief bill in because he stands to rake in a big wad of cash from FEMA after Irma knocks the living daylights out of his trashy South Florida properties. Just saying, just wondering, right? Yeah. And I thought because I try to be a decent human being. And I thought about, I'm thinking about a lot of people in South Florida right now, or Florida generally. You kind of knew that sooner or later this had to happen. The monster storm was going to come. I saw a scale comparison between Andrew, which was a Cat 5, and Irma, which is, it's like, assuming whoever did the photo was doing it on the up and up. Irma's about three times as big as Andrew was. Wow. That says something. So I thought you'd be. Well. But I've also been informed via email today that Irma is already breaking up and it's not going to be a big deal. This is also from someone who constantly sends me emails telling me about, who all these people who lack ideological purity. For instance, I recommended that people read over at the Atlantic. I recommended last night that people read Ta-Nehisi Coates's The First White President, and was promptly informed that Mr. Coates is insufficiently ideologically pure, and damn him forever for living in Paris on a MacArthur Foundation grant. That constituted him being, an Uncle Tom or something. I mean, look, I can't make this stuff up. I mean, that's the way the minds work over there in the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. It really, it also included some boasting about making a fortune shorting on orange juice futures or some such shit as that. You know, because that's what I'm thinking about. I'm watching a hurricane approach Florida that's wider than the entire state by a significant amount. And I'm thinking, you know what? I bet there's money to be made there. Fuck all those people. There's probably money to be made there. Yeah, speaking of money to be made, Equifax, and this is just for conversational consideration. But the Equifax scandal grows as people become more and more aware of what, 143, 149 million American adults who had their most relevant and precious data stolen from them? Well, it was kind of interesting to note that, by yesterday, we were already talking about it, Equifax had put up a website where you could check to see if you were affected. But, of course, you had to sign off on an agreement first. You always have to sign a EULA or something like that with anything you do on the Internet. So you had to sign off on an agreement. And lo and behold, that agreement had some rather shall we say, specific language in it. Yeah. And that specific language went something like this. This is what you had to click yes, I agree, etc. on if you wanted to find out if Equifax had let your personal data get stolen out there into the phalanosphere. This arbitration will be conducted as an individual arbitration. Neither you nor we consent or agree to any arbitration on a class or representative basis, and the arbitrator shall have no authority to proceed with arbitration on a class or representative basis. No arbitration will be consolidated with any other arbitration proceeding without the consent of all parties. This class action waiver provision applies to and includes any claims made and remedies sought as part of any class action, private attorney general action, or other representative action. By consenting to submit your claims to arbitration, you will be forfeiting your right to bring or participate in any class action, whether as a named plaintiff or a class member, or to share in any class action awards, including class claims, where a class has not yet been certified, even if the facts and circumstances upon which the claims are based already occurred or existed. In other words, if you want Equifax to tell you whether or not your shit's been stolen, you have to first waive your right to ever sue them. No, really, that was what came to mind for them. Oh my God, 143 million people's vital identifying data has been stolen from us. Whatever shall we do? Should we tell the public? Fuck no! No, let's sit on the information for 41 days while we get the legal department and the IT department. The IT department will put together a website where people can say, where we can tell people to go if they want to find out if their shit's been stolen, and the legal department can come up with a little click box thingy that says, yes, I've read and I agree, which nobody ever reads, that will then say, I give up my right to ever sue Equifax for letting all my shit get stolen. Evil fuckers. But we're surprised. Oh, and the same person who told me that there was a fortune to be made in orange juice while people's lives were at risk. They also suggested that, well, sure, Equifax is evil, but what about Google and Yahoo and everybody else? I didn't know Google and Yahoo were credit reporting agencies. I didn't know Google and Yahoo had the power to determine whether or not you could buy a new car or buy a house or get a credit card. I had no idea that Google and Yahoo were doing that kind of thing. False equivalences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, keep an eye out. Really, the only thing you can do, the best thing, in my estimation, is to wait and see when the class action rolls around and sign on with it. Nobody's going to get rich, but just maybe add your name to the group. You might get 29 cents, which, of course, will be reduced by a third after lawyer's fees. But the point here, and this is kind of what I'm leading into, the point here is to punish them. For instance, that's where the term punitive damages come from. Mm-hmm. Which leads me, you know, to another thought. And that is, that's your only way of expressing your outrage. As Jug-a-Punch points out in the chat room, and hi, good evening to the chat room. You're mighty welcome there, as you are in the Horn Malloy Skype chat later on when we fire that up for Friday on the Front Porch. If you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Jug-a-Punch and Kid Mark and Labor Man and VT Blom and longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who being a spacing guild master, has folded space to enter the cool, comfortable confines of the man cave, as well as midweek utility, all-around great guy, chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Jug-a-Punch simply observes, I never signed or made an agreement for Equifax to collect personal information on me. Neither did anyone else. They just took it. They took it and used it to make millions and gajillions and bajillions of dollars. Whether you consent it or not, consumer. Mm-hmm. How about that? Ah, capitalism. Again, which leads to the thought that I'm having here, namely, how do we get to a place where we can have a corporate death penalty? I mean, we kill poor black people for various, you know, we'll kill a poor black or white or Asian or Latino person for sitting behind the wheel of a car while a murder's being committed that the person didn't even know was going to be committed, felony or otherwise. We will kill somebody for that. But we won't kill a corporation for any reason whatsoever. And the Equifax thing just brought back to me in rather stark terms, the considerable the considerable need for for a corporate death penalty. What would a corporate death penalty look like? How would you create it at law? Oh, now, dadgummit, James, don't get me ciphering. Bob, what's a third of 29 cents come to? Another question, what's two-thirds of 29 cents come to? Yeah, okay. About something like, 9.3 cents? Two-thirds would be 18.6 cents, I believe. Of course, I'm just ciphering on the fly, and we all know I'm not very good at it. Leave that to the lawyer, James. A lawyer can divide any number by three. But can we get to a consensus on the idea that we need a corporate death penalty? Now we're not talking about taking any precious little CEOs or hedge fund managers or banksters or anybody like that. We're not talking about taking them out and lining up them against the wall. Kind of a pity. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about killing a corporation. Making a corporation cease to exist. pulling its charter, declaring it null and void, making sure that it can never be re-registered in any way, shape, form, or fashion in any state in this union ever again, or do business in same. But of course, a corporate death penalty means nothing if there's some way around it. That's the thing about death penalties. They have to have finality. And so, you know, maybe we could, I mean, I think we obviously need to make jail sentences for corporate officers and board members. We need to make those more meaningful. But when an organization is just rotten from top to bottom, you know, like an Equifax, well, remember, death penalty advocates always say, well, you know, we got to keep the death penalty out there because it serves as a deterrent to people running around murdering on each other. Got to keep it out there. That's what keeps your murder rate low. The threat of being murdered in turn by the state. So I would think that the threat of having a corporation eliminated would serve a similar purpose, wouldn't it? Yeah, but after all, then the officers, I mean, they've got talents, they've got skills, they'll just go off and go to work for another corporation somewhere. Yeah, it's probably true. So we'd probably need to create something that's like business equivalent of a dishonorable discharge in the military. Like give the CEO of Equifax a dishonorable firing and sort of make him wear it around his neck for the rest of his days. But there has to be more to it than that, too. A corporate death penalty means nothing if you're just eliminating the corporation and taking their ill-gotten gains and sharing them over to some other outfit. Oh, that's a nice idea, Carol Baker. How to kill a corporation? Do to them what they say will kill them. Force them to pay a living wage. Make them pay their fair share of taxes. That'll kill them. I know it because they tell me so all the time. Ain't that the truth?
Oh, we can't do business if we have to pay a living wage to people. I mean, we pay a living wage to... if you average out the wages we pay to our executive class with the wages that we pay to our labor class, you know, our lowest paid labor, it all works out, and everybody makes a living wage. It's just that some people do a little more living than other people do. See how it works? It's math. It's math. Yeah. I'm thinking... And there's a good question coming from Kelly. Why shouldn't Equifax be required to notify us? Well, that would cost money. Goodness me. Yeah, none of this email bullshit either. Do it in writing and do it by the United States Postal Service. There we go. Because it's not like they don't have the address. But no, I actually thought about this over the course of the day. A corporate death penalty should include seizure and liquidation of all assets. In other words, if you can't have an auction, and let's say you apply the corporate death penalty to Equifax, so Experian and TransUnion just come up and come in and buy all the assets. Uh-uh. That's not a penalty. That's just changing jerseys. In the case of a corporate death penalty, everything has to be zeroed out. Completely wipe it out. I mean, sell everything down to the last fiber of the last square inch of carpet. Take away all, fire all the executives, and take away every penny that they have made during the period of time that they've worked for the corporation. And then seize all the assets. Zero out the shareholders too, Sunshine. Because remember, we're trying to serve a deterrent purpose. We're trying to keep corporations from engaging in behavior that would lead them to have the corporate death penalty imposed upon them. That's right, shareholders. You're going to have to be a little more careful about whom you invest in. Because if you invest in somebody that gets the corporate death penalty, then whatever money you've got in the corporation isn't going to be your money anymore. See, we do this to poor people all the time in the legal system. Legal. We do. If you're poor and you wind up in the pokey and you say you didn't do it, well, the judge is going to set a bond on you that will be sufficient to keep you behind bars until you're tried. Unless you can raise 10% of the value of the bond, and then a bondsman will let you out. So, boom, let's say it's a $25,000 bond, you're at $2,500. If you're poor folks, that's a ruinous amount of money. And then comes the fines and the fees. And if you want to assert your innocence in court after a year or 2 years or 3 years sitting in jail, in many of which instances you're being charged for the cost of housing you in jail, then you're gonna have more money tacked on. And if you're found guilty, there's a fine after that, and court costs. See how it works? So if we can do that to poor people, why can't we do that to rich people? So, okay, there's a term being bandied about in my email now. Both Keith and James have pointed out, have used the term math death. I wasn't sure if they were making fun of my ciphering skills or if it was something else. And I'd love to, but I don't have time to. I'm in the middle of the program. I can't watch the video. Now, so I'd say that's a topic for conversation. Oh, would that be cruel to the poor little shareholders? I'm sorry. Maybe they should never have invested. In a corporation that engages in filthy, skeevy, sleazy conduct. And see, it's not like the Equifaxes of the world just sat back and gathered data like like a, you know, a squirrel gathering hickory nuts before the winter. They lobbied. The credit reporting that took place in a previous generation is not today's credit reporting. A lot of this changes back along about the time that so many of our betters were up in Washington changing the bankruptcy laws. Used to be that if you declared if you had oodles of credit card debt, you could declare bankruptcy, and just, well, the credit card company was not a secured creditor, so, you know, fuck them. Tell them to go pound sand. But that all changed in the early aughts. And there are a lot of people that we can thank for that. Joe Biden was one of them. Hillary was another. I don't know. Maybe Bernie was one of them, too. I think that would be back when he was in the House. But the credit card companies pissed and moaned and bawled and squalled and cried and said, no, we've got to be secured creditors, even though all our agreements with our cardholders say that we're not. Oh, please let us get paid, bankruptcy judge, please. And they pressed their little noses up against the frosty window pane and looked in at all the credit card holders in sitting inside, living libertine lives of food eating and tire buying and couch sitting. Yeah. And along about the same time, something that had never been done before, the credit reporting agency started gathering data on when and how you paid your fucking power bill, or your phone bill, or your water bill, or your gas bill. And suddenly, semi-fixed monthly expenditures entered into the calculation, and that was used to further put pressure on ordinary workaday Americans. So that, you know, if you'd had a car note or a mortgage and you know, you paid it off, that shit didn't matter. My God, you were 15 seconds late with your goddamn power bill payment, you son of a, you deadbeat prick. Okay, I didn't know about math death. Thank you, Michael, for clearing that up. Math death is a term Norman Goldman uses whenever he or a caller get into the weeds with a lot of numbers. It's always accompanied by a clip of W uttering the phrase, it's a Bushism. Okay. Glenn, subject line, free market. Oh, those poor shareholders. Maybe they should have done a little bit of research before they invested. Oh, my, those poor fuckers. Free market, baby. And since, as Nipper pointed out to me on Twitter a couple of nights ago, governments create markets and not the other way around, well, the market exists at the sufferance of governance then, doesn't it? So if government wants to create a, you know, corporate death penalty, government can. Keith noting, like you said, it happens to the poor all the time. The saying should be put in use for corporations. Not picking on you, Bob. Okay, well, that's fine. And if you want to pick on me, that's fine. So, you know, maybe that's something we'll talk about when we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, not only that, credit reporting agencies never used to monitor essential services like electricity, water, and other utilities. Wow, great minds. Out of all those years of following Dim Leader during the Reign of Error, how did I miss math death? Or maybe I put that on a brain cell I killed. Who knows? So that topic's out there, and we can discuss it. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy, who said, in memory of Troy Gentry of Montgomery, Gentry, who died today in a helicopter crash in New Jersey. I didn't know that.
Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. That means we got $345 to go in fundraising this evening. Jeremy points out it's still hard for them to get money, uh-oh. I know I dodge them too often myself. Credit card companies, that is. But they have a status inside a bankruptcy proceeding that they'd never had before. So just that. But I am at risk of doing something that would grieve me greatly if I did it. And that is to fail that's sad too. Country Music Hall of Famer Don Williams dead at 78. That hurts. As did the death of Walter Becker last weekend. Big part of the soundtrack of my life, Walter Becker, Steely Dan. And Don Williams, well, good old boys like me is one of those defining songs for me. But I don't want to let the hour go past the Friday on the Front Porch or filibobster. I don't want to let it go past without noting the earthquake that took place off the southwestern Mexican coast overnight. It is the worst earthquake to strike Mexico. The one in the 80s that flattened big parts of Mexico City? At least 58 people are dead, I think. Probably will be considerably worse. And I saw a photograph last night, and it was billed as being a photograph that no one has ever seen in the modern era, or an image no one has ever seen. It's not a photograph. And it showed an almost perfect line of three hurricanes getting ready to strike North America almost in succession. No meteorologist, no climate scientist, no weather person has ever seen anything like that before. That's where we are here in 2017. And then on top of it, of course, we've talked about the wildfires burning in the American West. And then there's the monsoons, or the monsoon that has wiped out over 100,000 homes and killed over 1,200 people in Asia, particularly in Bangladesh. And then this earthquake. And that pretty much, okay, it's somewhat facetious to say it, that pretty much leaves volcanoes, frogs and locusts, rivers of blood, and the killing of the firstborn male child in every family. Then we'll pretty much, But what got me thinking was the fact that Irma, earlier in the week, was noted to be so strong, so powerful,
that it was registering on the Richter scale. And no, I'm not a scientist, but it got me wondering last night, what if what was thought to be Irma registering on the Richter scale was actually the crust of the Earth, you know, trembling across a broad region? Volcanoes are no joke. Within sight of Mexico City are two very, very powerful, very active ones, Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl. Is that how you say it? I don't know. One of these days I'll have the spare time to take a class in Nahuatl, and then we'll know. Ron in the frozen day after tomorrow north points out just yet another day of heavy rain showers and cool temps in Ottawa. I think that makes 126 days this calendar year. I'm starting to think this weather has something to do with climate change. Or is it the other way around? It's getting to the point that I don't even smile when someone tells me that I should wear my rubbers. You have to always smile when someone tells you to wear your rubbers. No, I'm past all that now. And so, just as we have largely ignored the climatic catastrophe in Bangladesh, we'll probably mostly ignore the earthquake damages in Mexico. And then we will go on to ignore the hurricane damages from Katia in Veracruz State. I mean, I haven't noticed any of the big for-profit media networks flying, parachuting telejournalists into Veracruz to report there. There will probably be a considerable death toll there as well from things like mudslides coming down out of the mountains. Maybe it'll get a reader somewhere along the way. All right. And then this. Courtesy of Steve, presently on the Gulf Coast. Note from an original cracker. As Hurricane Irma gets set to make mincemeat out of Florida, I, like everyone else, watch on the other daily deluge of news made for news that constitutes our media in this hyper-misinformed free world. What strikes me most, what comes as no surprise, is the very typical and sickening absence of any real live coverage of what is actually happening to the other people. And by the way, our buddy the Angry Indian points out to me, it is still dark in Portland, Brother Bob. Yeah. The other, continues Steve, and not the white segment, who even get to hog up all the broadcast time, just as they do everything else. I lived for some time in the real Miami, downtown, the little Havana part of Miami that is not in any way so much as at the periphery of focus, not even in casual passing. Here we are, folks, in Little Havana, one of the most interesting and storied parts of central Miami. No, but who doesn't love a day at the beach? Especially if it's Miami Beach or South Beach or Palm Beach or anywhere up the long coast of high-rise condos and towers, all those touristy and photogenic icons representing and easily sanitizing the whole South Florida way of life of hurricaning, no less. Catered buffets and fancy ocean views and pretty umbrella cocktails and drunken romance. It's Miami, for Christ's sake. Once upon a time, gangsters and Jackie Gleason. Give me a break. I mean, everyone loves to be in the blow and swirl of the coming storm, especially given the lead time we have these days with just sitting around and twirling our thumbs until the monster actually hits. The reporters are enthusiastic for whatever it is they do in the way of reporting. Sure, long gas lines. We've got some really long gas lines here today, Bill. Emptied store shelves. There's not a box of lentils left to be had in South Florida. Prosperous folks at the Home Depot scrambling for portable generators, storm window prefab kits, drinking water, batteries. Bye, bye, bye. But who doesn't already know that? I think I've been asking that question. About as interesting as peaches in Georgia, tangerines outside of Tampa. I'm talking about something else, maybe bye, 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 B-Y-E, for the other. Hunched down in the cramped afterlife of what has or should be the infamous Overtown, for example, remnant of the historic African-American community that thrived for generations, a real community until the city planners decide... Stand by, please. Overtown, remnant of the historic African American community that thrived for generations, a real community until the city planners decided to bust it up so that the new expressway could slice on through, deeming the movement of high flyers and fast car of far greater importance than the other people and their similarly other lives and livelihoods. You know, Overtown, as in the concrete roadway that goes over and through your inward world, goes through like a hurricane. Well, after all, how many of us actually know about Little Havana, also downtown? And these days known not so much as the home of the generations-old, significantly prosperous Cuban-American community, which long ago shifted to Hialeah and elsewhere, as the commune of all the various nations and denominations of Latin American and Caribbean basin culture that otherwise represent just about any sort of living connection there could be to points south of South Florida and, well, the rest of the whole goddamn world, at least in this hemisphere. Maybe a living connection, wouldn't you think, to the fucking hurricane raging through the Caribbean and Atlantic? And all those other people on all the little dots that are getting smeared and blown to bits by the monster? Except for the rich landowners, the new planters, who are mostly worried about their condos blowing away, along with the vacation rental income. But who otherwise aren't in such bad shape, what with good insurance and tickets out on the next flight? What with a shitload of other N-word and their shit-cheap labor to pick up the pieces, those who are still there and not pieces themselves. To be fair, we know a little about these other, especially from the air, flying past the wreckage, the reporters making panicky little noises in between sips of fine plantation-picked coffee, headed soon enough to press deadlines in the rest of the spinning white world. Oh, did I mention Coconut Grove? Traditionally, historically African-American, or is that also via the British, but most importantly, Bahamian, as in Bahamas, another other, which is getting the bee-Jesus kicked out of its fine self even as I write. Maybe one or another media type should interview a few folks over there, also downtown, find out what some of them are doing. Ask them how they feel about some part of their ancestry getting smashed to splinters or drowned. Ask at least one about some living person getting dead real soon. Nah. Safer to shoot twilight scenes on the beach, wade in the surf, feel the tingle of electricity in the air just before the big one, right after a sweet piña colada, a tart slice of key lime pie. Work is such a freaking drag anyway, right, boys and girls? What with all this sand and company tab to work through. Safer to interview credit card holders at the airport. Ask them if their doggy or kitty is all right, then go snooping around the scarier, poorer, darker parts of the world looking for the truth. There's also a little Haiti, and a little this, and a little that. Point made, anyway. Shit. If you're like me, most Americans, you take too many of your holidays on TV anyway. Who can afford the Art Deco hotels or B&Bs on South Beach? The owners have fled along with the seagulls long ago. Just a few brave and very temporary reporters mooning over another moon over Miami, awaiting the last first-class flight out. For the rest, best find a piece of good rope and a palm tree. Some things just love to hate to change, don't they? Regards, Steve, on the Gulf Coast. By the way, Steve adds, I lived right smack dab in the middle of Little Havana for over 8 years, and also know the lesser frequented parts of the general Miami metro area, where most of the white people never go. Well, maybe on a bet, but I never ran into more than a few, and they were usually just lost, or sizing up slash stealing new property. You know, we generally offer up cowbells for humor around these parts. But in this particular instance, cowbell to Steve on the Gulf Coast for the profundity of the content. In that piece of correspondence. So let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Check in with a few notes. Glenn writing. It's like the credit card companies came in my garage, stole my lawn more than called me to tell me that my lawn was more stolen from them that I can't sue them to get it back. That is what it's like. It's like the earth is getting ready to shake us off like a bad case of fleas. Living on the earth is like being on the top of a very thin crust that has a boiling cauldron beneath it. Yeah. Indeed. By the way, the New York Times is at least bothering to report that in the case of the Mexican earthquake, one town there, one hard-hit city, looks as if it had been bombed. More than 5,000 homes completely destroyed. The city's 19th century city hall with its 30 arches buckled. The hospital collapsed. We're talking about Juchitlan de Zaragoza. I wonder if they've parachuted. I wonder if anybody's been parachuted in there yet. Yeah. So, like I said, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you've never connected with me on Skype before, send me a contact request, Bob Kincaid Horn. As it is, dial in if you want to be part of the conversation. Well, there's no dialing actually involved. I mean, you know what I mean. But contact me. Call. Let's use call. and we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and get the conversation going after a brief musical interlude to allow folks to do that and allow me to screw up two or three times before we actually do that. He said do. And we'll just we'll go from there and see where the conversation takes us. Because there's other stuff, like the fact that we have now been instructed by EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt that we can't talk about climate change right now. Here's the issue. To have any kind of focus on the cause and effect of the storm versus helping people or actually facing the effect of the storm is misplaced. What we need to focus on is access to clean water, addressing these areas of Superfund activities that may cause an attack on water, these issues of access to fuel. Those are things so important to citizens of Florida right now. And to discuss the cause and effect of these storms, there's a place and time to do that. It's just not now. The problem is it ain't now, and no, there isn't a place and a time. Because every time we try to discuss it, you know, somebody like Scott Pruitt, who is paid very, very well to say it, hollers, not real. And frankly, I'm sick to death of discussions of climate change. God damn, that's like discussing wet with water. Climate change is real, and you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Or you can try to be part of the solution. But if you won't even acknowledge its reality and the role of human beings in causing it, you are without a doubt part of the problem. And Scott Pruitt is 110%, 200 proof, part of the problem. So, yeah, break time. I haven't played any Steely Dan this week, but been meaning to. So let's, we'll have a little bit of classic Steely Dan. And get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch at the Horn underway. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. as could well be expected, there were a lot of choices to be made, but that's always been a favorite, so I went with that here at the Western World. Although, I also considered bad sneakers because of Steve's reference to a piña colada. Bad sneakers and a piña colada, my friend. Right. Friday on the front porch on the horn, 12 minutes past 7, $345 to raise on this Front Porch Miracle Friday. So there we are. Let's not shilly-shally about. Let's run over and check in. Hey, Steve from Georgia Stan, how the heck are you?
Bob, what's going on, man?
Ah, not a heck of a lot. I guess you're just kind of hunkered down and waiting for the tropical storm flavored winds to what?
Oh yeah, can't wait. I'm actually sipping Jack Daniels and shopping for generators. That's quite the combo, huh?
Absolutely. What are you looking for in a generator?
Champion is what I'm looking at, and they've come way down. I'm surprised. And here's the Murphy's Law. If I get a generator, my lights won't so much as even flicker. If I don't get one, I'll be out of power.
That is exactly how it works. Now, I went through this, but we couldn't raise enough money to do it a while back. Because, of course, we'll be moving into power outage season soon. You know, two or three snowflakes land on a line in West Virginia, and we'll be out of power for 2 or 3 weeks. Yep. You know, 100,000 people. Got some background noise coming from somebody.
I think it's the 206 person.
Yeah, who is the 206 person?
I have no idea.
Hey, in the 206...
Shall I intrude on Steve from Georgistan?
Well, no, but while you're not talking, just mute your interface or whatever.
And you got it.
Float.
Yeah. But who is this?
Oh, hi. This is CL.
Oh, hi, CL. I'm so glad you called in. Stand by. We'll get to you.
Great.
We'll get to you just in a sec, okay?
Uh-huh.
No, I was pricing them, Steve, and there's a really, depending on what your needs are, if you don't need an inverter, the price comes down substantially. But if you want to be able to run your technology, you'll need an inverter, or at least that's
exactly
what I'm told. And Champion
exactly.
And Champion makes one that's really interesting because it's a dual fuel. It'll run on either gas or propane.
Huh. The one I was looking at just ran on gas, and it had a 1.6 gallon capacity. And they're kind of a pain in the ass because you're always having to change the oil on the things too, you know. And
well, but I mean that's just a thing. I mean, you're going.
Yeah.
It's a gas engine. You got to change the oil in it, and the better you are with the oil, the better it will run. But no, they've got one that's dual fuel, and it ranges anywhere from like $960 to $1,200, depending on who you're looking at. Costco carries it. I found it on Amazon. You know, the Hondas are the
they're high ends,
the benchmark standard.
Right.
But you know who can afford that stuff?
Certainly not me. I mean, I was looking, trying to keep it within the grand range. You know, so that's where I'm at. But yeah, it looks like, you know, they change the forecast every 6 hours, so everyone is on edge around here.
And you're in Georgia, and people are on edge.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am 400 miles from the closest ocean, so, yeah, we could get clobbered. I mean, they're talking winds as high as sustained of 50 and gusts above 70 here. Imagine what that monster is going to be like when it pulls offshore.
Oh, without it, well, but remember, you know, take heart, Steve. I've already been told that Irma is a neoliberal shill establishment hurricane that is going to weaken and fall apart before it ever hits Florida.
Well, that's one time I wish I could agree with that right-wing tool or whoever it is, but it's not going to happen.
It's going to be hell among the yearlings. Well, I'm tickled pink to have CL in the group this evening.
Yeah, well, go ahead and get to her, Bob. I'll jump back in later.
Yeah, CL, welcome. Glad you could join in the conversation.
CL. Yeah, it'll take you a minute to unmute.
Sorry, I didn't unmute the mute.
But now you have.
How are you tonight? I have now. I just started talking, and there was nobody receiving. How are you all?
I won't speak for the rest of the group, but, you know, I don't have a hurricane bearing down on me, so that probably means that I'm in better than usual shape. You're out in the Northwest, though. You're probably breathing smoke, right?
Breathing smoke and looking up at a sky that's full of moons that are, like, varying from coral to rust orange to deep red, and sun's the same. It's really quite alarming.
Well, last night I sent out on Twitter that things were feeling a mite apocalyptic. Does it look apocalyptic? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's actually for the first time in quite some time, it's crowded over, and the temperatures have moderated, and I'm much more comfortable in my skin today than I was yesterday.
Well, that's a beginning.
That is. But I've had it in my mind for some time now. I've been hearing some fierce cries of anguish and shouts of pure laughter pealing and echoing across the spans of dividing us, ringing off all the hills hereabouts. So here I am. Just traveling down the road from a fur piece, following the flock, just like the bellwether I be, just listening and doing what I can to help out.
Well, wonderful, wonderful, and I'm glad you are. So, as you come to the front porch for a little chat, is anything in particular on your mind?
Oh, quite a number of things. It's hard to delimit and define, but I've got one particular thing that might be a bit of an influence in this often testosterone-laden but convivial gathering on Fridays. For me, it's afternoon. For you, it's evening. And I have in mind to speak on a particular story that's emerged from the sports world.
Oh, do please.
I'm going to try. It's quite a large and heartbreaking topic, but it's one that you and many other members of this clan or community have been speaking to with a great deal of very earnest gratifying and genuine effort, and I've been appreciating it very much from members of the community who are of various hues, and this has to do with what has just broken on the news in the last 24 hours or so, but was held in abeyance after the Mayweather and McGregor?
McGregor.
McGregor.
See, unlike me, unlike me, you didn't screw up Mayweather's name, so you're already out in front.
Well, unfortunately, a few lives were screwed up afterwards, and it included Michael Bennett, who attended that fight. And after the fight, he sojourned at a local club in Las Vegas. And at some point in the evening, it's still all a little bit murky because there's probable lawsuits afoot, and the police are going to have to do some serious down deep investigating, but this fellow who is the pride of Seattle, he's just an amazing man. He was at a club called Dre, And suddenly there was shouts of, well, that somebody heard was hearing gunshots. And the police were obtained, and they, I guess, set up a line and were starting to go through the club, and people were scrambling, and Mike was, I guess, according to the Las Vegas police, he was seen in alongside some kind of an object, some equipment or something, and one of the police officers, who happened to be Hispanic, grabbed him, and then he was also taken by another, as he had run out of the club, and they grabbed him, threw him to the ground. One of the officers pulled his gun, according to Mike, and laid it up alongside his head, his temple. The other one kneed him in the back as the first officer was handcuffing him. And after almost all of this had come to pass, somebody from overhead shot with their phone, camera phone. They shot a short little bit. It's only about a minute or two long, but it was passed over to TMZ, and it's been all over online. And Mike, of course, it all broke yesterday, and there was the coach of the Seahawks, Coach Carroll, Pete Carroll, had a press conference, and at the end of that press conference, Mike Bennett came forward, and he spoke. And then after he spoke, Richard Sherman, he came up and spoke. And it was so devastating, even though this Mayweather McGregor fight was like a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple weekends back.
A couple weekends back, about Saturday, I think. Mike had not come forward with any of this because he headed straight for Houston, which is his hometown, and he had come down to Houston to help with the devastating floods after aftermath of the catastrophic climate change that's upon us, and so he just dug into doing what he always does, which is try to serve, try to help humanity, which is he's really at heart an activist in the uniform of a football player. And he's one of the rare ones who stood in alliance with Colin Kaepernick, with Cap, when he sat and
right, and that's one of those things. That's one of those things that makes you wonder if he was targeted in this whole affair.
I tend to think that he was just a black-skinned man with dreads who was looking like he said he was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And
there's a specific statement that was involved here that is particularly, you know, troubling. But of course, it's also just in the community of color. I can sit here as a white guy and say, wow, you know, this is certainly troubling. But in the community of color, you know, it's just Tuesday. One of the cops looked at Michael Bennett and said, I'll blow your head off. Okay, and you know that's serious.
Oh, it's very serious. it's very serious, but like you say, it's Tuesday, and that's what is the general consensus amongst.
But you know, Bennett didn't have a weapon on him. He wasn't behaving belligerently. He wasn't doing anything except, as you note, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so some wild-eyed Las Vegas cop says, "I'll blow your head off." And since he went public with it, it has created, to coin a phrase, a shitstorm. Because, as you point out, Michael Bennett is pretty well squeaky clean and is beloved by the community up there. And the NFL released a statement saying, "Michael Bennett is, we are proud of Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett is what we hope NFL players will aspire to be like, you know, be like Mike." And, his lawyer has called for an investigation of the police conduct. What's interesting is that now the cop union in Las Vegas is trying to intimidate Michael Bennett into silence. Okay?
What's a look on that one?
Well,
no way that he's going to be silenced. Not a chance.
Detective Steve Gramas, who is president of the Las Vegas Cop Union, was interviewed by USA Today Sports, and he said, "I hope to have a discussion with Commissioner Goodell so we can have a conversation about these allegations that our officers are racist and racially profiled Mr. Bennett. We don't like players from the National Football League making false allegations, which I feel is a violation of the NFL's personal conduct policy."
Yeah, well, that's their standard. That's their standard line. That's their standard stance. And I think that this is, they're mixing it up with, it's great misfortune that it happened. It's happening, as we all know, more and more and more every day. It's not that it's happening more. It's just that I think more and more of us as a nation.
Right. And
all of our diversity are acutely aware of it because of social media.
And pretty well and pretty well tired of it in many instances as well. Isn't it curious that the officer who I tend to believe Mr. Bennett yelled, "I could blow your head off." Isn't it interesting that he wasn't wearing his body cam that night? How about that? Oh, doggone it. Darn the luck. Yeah. The NFL stood by him, CL. They stood by Bennett.
Yeah.
NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy wrote an email back to USA Today Sports and said, "There is no allegation of a violation of the league's personal conduct policy, and therefore there is no basis for an NFL investigation."
Huh.
So, I'm a pretty thoroughgoing critic of the NFL. It's not like they don't earn it every day. But in this case, they are at least standing by the player. And that's kind of shocking in its own right. I mean, these are statements coming out of the NFL head office. This isn't a statement coming from the Players Association. This is the this is the management side saying, "No, nah, there's nothing here."
Well, they have both the Seahawks management, the coach, all of the GM, John Snyder, they all have just the world of admiration for this talented man who is exemplary even more off the field than on. His dedication, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay. My screen went just black and it kind of scared me for a second. Yeah, so, I'd love to be able to just give you a couple of little tidbits about what he's been up to in his life. He's gone. I could hand you a whole list. There's a a fellow who is a sports specialist for The Nation. I think his name is Roy Dyson or Ray Dyson. I can't remember his name right off, but he was interviewed this morning by Amy Goodman after Michael's brother, who's a teammate on Green Bay, who the Seahawks are going to open the season with at Green Bay on Sunday, and so brother against brother on Sunday, but his brother broke down when he saw that little tiny clip that doesn't show a heck of a lot, but you get the full horror of what was just happening there. I mean, he broke down in tears. He couldn't handle it. And Michael has worked, dedicated. He works when he's off in Seattle. He helps with all kinds of causes, all kinds of efforts at working with you know, communities of color and communities of every way, shape, and form. In Houston, when he goes back home to Houston, he works there tirelessly. When he's in off season, he'll go to Hawaii. He works there. When he's touched by, like, Cliff Averill, who is from Haiti, I believe, and he dedicated every sack. Cliff did in the last season. He dedicated to building a house for the earthquake ravaged people of Haiti. And Mike went there and helped out for a spell as long as he could for that effort. And he travels around the world wherever he feels the call. And he has a brother-in-law whose name is, let me give it to you correctly. Let's see. His brother-in-law, Tristan Firecloud, who's a member of the Lower Brule Sioux tribe on Missouri, and he was in South Dakota. And I was just looking at something this morning. He's on the reservation, smack dab in the middle of South Dakota, where celebrity sightings are as rare as traffic jams, which is why this day in June is a little unusual. And he's in a community center off Crazy Horse Avenue, where crowds gathered to catch the sight of this guy, this Seahawk, who's introduces himself by trying to stump the DJ that's hired for the event. "Do you have the Isley Brothers?" Bennett asked. "You said you could play any song I wanted." The DJ, unable to meet his request, suggests Michael Jackson as an alternative. "Which Michael Jackson?" Bennett quips. "The black Michael Jackson or the white Michael Jackson?" And then the kids just burst out in laughter. But, you know, he's trying to do some work with the kids and with a community that's living in the lowest, just about the lowest, I think the second to the lowest or the first lowest overall income level. So much poverty in that part of the country. And I listened to him talking, and he's supporting Colin Kaepernick, as I said, and he's continued to sit. And I was just in the process this morning of trying to do some research, because there's a stanza in the national anthem, and people don't realize this. I think very, very few people realize that there is a stanza, and I didn't have time to track it down, although I was close to it before your gathering here on the front porch, fired up. So I'll have to leave my research for another day.
I'm glad you brought the story to the conversation. I think it might be instructive, or at least helpful. I pulled up the original statement by Michael Bennett that got the whole thing started. And reading it, having read it, I can see why this made the Las Vegas Police Department go absolutely batshit.
Oh, yeah.
Because he straight up challenged them. Here's what he tweeted. It's a statement, and he tweeted the word equality, followed by this statement. Give me a sec. Dear World, on Saturday, August 26, 2017, I was in Las Vegas to attend the Mayweather-McGregor fight on my day off. After the fight, while heading back to my hotel, several hundred people heard what sounded like gunshots. Like many of the people in the area, I ran away from the sound looking for safety. Las Vegas police officers singled me out and pointed their guns at me for doing nothing more than simply being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, I think it's worth noting here, it's not like he was hanging out in the club. He was literally on his way back after the fight, just, minding his own business. A police officer ordered me to get on the ground. As I laid on the ground, complying with his commands to not move, he placed his gun near my head and warned me that if I moved, he, quote, would blow my fucking head off, unquote. Terrified and confused by what was taking place, a second officer came over and forcefully jammed his knee into my back, making it difficult for me to breathe. They then cinched the handcuffs on my wrists so tight that my fingers went numb. The officer's excessive use of force was unbearable. I felt helpless as I lay there on the ground, handcuffed, facing the real-life threat of being killed. All I could think of was, I'm going to die for no other reason than I am black and my skin color is somehow a threat. My life flashed before my eyes as I thought of my girls. Would I ever play with them again, or watch them have kids, or be able to kiss my wife again and tell her I love her? I kept asking the officers, what did I do? And reminding them that I had rights that they were duty-bound to respect. And as an aside, I will note that nothing drives a police officer into more of a petulant, tyrannical rage than for an ordinary citizen to say, I have rights. Because the police officers like to think that they can delete any rights that they want as long as they determine that the situation warrants it. Reminding them that I had rights that they were duty-bound to respect. The officers ignored my pleas and instead told me to shut up and then took me to the back of a nearby police car where I sat for what felt like an eternity until they apparently realized I was not a thug, common criminal, or ordinary black man, but Michael Bennett, a famous professional football player. After confirming my identity, I was ultimately released without any legitimate justification for the officer's abusive conduct. I have always held a strong conviction that protesting or standing up for justice is just simply the right thing to do. This fact is unequivocally, without question, why before every game I sit during the national anthem. Because equality doesn't live in this country, and no matter how much money you make, what job title you have, or how much you give, when you are seen as a nigger, you will be treated that way. The system failed me. I can only imagine what Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, and Charlena Lyles felt. I have retained Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris to investigate and explore all my legal options regarding filing a civil rights lawsuit for the violation of my constitutional rights. Sincerely, Michael Bennett. And that has caused the Las Vegas Police Department to go into sweat condition alpha. because he has tremendous credibility, he has tremendous respect, and they just screwed up in a very, very large way.
That's why people are saying that they didn't mess with the wrong man, they messed with the right man.
And that is so true.
And people are equating it with I'm blanking. Basketball player, who is suffering from chronic AIDS now, or HIV.
Oh, Magic Johnson?
Magic, yeah. Sorry about that. And, you know, they're equating it with that breakthrough, because things changed quite significantly after the realization that people were having that, oh, my God, this happens to, you know, potentially anybody. And I think that he's articulate. He's a real powerhouse in so many different ways, Bob. And I just hope that the platform that will be available to him, although he'll have to probably, he's hired an attorney out of the Bay Area, who's a specialist in civil rights law.
Right. Yeah, that's John Burris.
Yes, that's exactly who it is. And this is part of his long story as a professional, you know, player. That I want to just touch one more time on this controversy back that began last year with Colin Kaepernick, and it extended to the Seahawks, several members joining Colin's effort to present a real-time, real-life acknowledgement that we've got problems. Our society is sick. It's sick from day one, from day zero, and we have to try to right the ship in every way we can. And I think there was a kicker who was released last year at the end of this last season for the Hawks. His name is Stephen Hoschke. He's working for the Buffalo Bills this year. And and he was, of course, Michael Bennett's teammate last year. And he's one of the few white NFL players who also spoke up as his protest, you know, made headlines around the world. And Stephen Hoschke wrote, and I'm going to just read this little brief bit, "For the people that don't seem to get it and want to sweep it under the rug, there is social injustice in this country." And that's why I'm referring back to that national anthem and the stanza in it that is a straight out paean to slavery. And you know, you can look it up. You know, so there is social injustice in this country. We need to acknowledge that and get educated in how to have these conversations. For the white people in our country, you are more important than you realize in this movement. In an interview with the Seattle Times, Hoschke would go on to say that he feels awkward speaking about racial injustice, adding, "I think a lot of white people are uncomfortable talking about it." Again, that word uncomfortable. Which brings us back to Bennett and his MO for advancing social justice. To be uncomfortable and turn that to comfortability is a hard transition for a human being. Because you get so comfortable being who you are, you get so comfortable living in your world, to have that sense of being uncomfortable and being vulnerable. And those things work together. I mean, it's hard to be vulnerable and be in a moment where you think, I am uncomfortable. I don't know anything about it, but I want to learn. And that really says it all right there about, I think, what you're doing with the horn and so many other members of this family of folks who have been gathering now for 12, 13 years. Is that right?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're trying to do, what this, you know, deep down bottom, you know, core principle that I've been hearing from you, from a fur piece, from the left coast. I really, really want to support in every way I can, and I've been spreading the word from this side.
I sure appreciate it. I mean, the whole purpose of all of this is to expand the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, I want to just pass on one more comment before I pass this along, this conversation along to the next member who wants to chime in. Please allow me to entertain for you. Just a minute. I got to pull it out here. Doggone it. Not cooperating. Here we are. Okay. Please, for me and for the world, remember today's date with bells on, for it is the birthday of that young boy from the borough of Brooklyn, of late receiving his just and deserved respect and exponential admirations, both within and beyond this nation, on the hunt forevermore like a hound on the bay, of pushing both justice and injustice to the forefront, though never pushing his own id or ego to the front of the line, simply leading by example for a lifetime of pure activism and caring for the oft-forgot, defending both small and large with equal determination and passion. He now resides in the peaceful cleavage in the bosom of Gaia, the domain of Vermont, and his name is Bernie Sanders, and today is his birthday.
Well, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Bernie. Today. And which birthday is it? Do you know offhand?
I'm not sure. I think he's close to 80, isn't he?
No,
you'll have to ask somebody.
I think, 73, 74, something like that?
Okay.
And he's got he's got a lot of irons in the fire. I have a feeling there will be some political fireworks next week. Just a guess. But I believe
Bob, that he has just published a new book, and it's a book to help educate young people on civics and civic education and governance and our responsibilities as citizens and activism, how to become an activist. And I didn't write the title down, which I'm sorry about, but I was running out of time here. But
he's 76 years old today.
76 years old.
Yep.
Well, I just have such a world of admiration for the guy. He's remarkable. I had good fortune to be able to hear him on most Fridays for a number of years, and really appreciated getting to know his point of view and respecting him and his accomplishments. And he wasn't one to beat his own, drum.
No, he simply talks about what this country desperately needs. I mean, yep. if you're one of those people like me who was raised by people who actually survived the Great Depression, thanks specifically to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, everything that Bernie says rings true and makes perfect sense. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and it was so exhilarating and just like a fresh wind coming through a very dense and uncomfortable climate when he arrived in Seattle. And I had a couple of chances to see him in a collective space. And just being in that environment and listening and receiving the energy from the entire space, all the people who came to share in that will and determination to make our world a better place and to find somebody who could help guide and direct the action.
Well, you know, I would love to hear Bernie. I'd love to hear Bernie chime in on the topic that I raised in the filibobster. I'd love to know what he thinks of the idea of a corporate death penalty. I can't imagine he would.
Well, it used to be there.
Well, no, we've never had a corporate.
It used to be there.
We've never had a corporate death penalty.
Yes, we have.
We have never had a corporate death penalty such as I described in the last hour.
No, maybe not exactly like you described it, but we did have a corporate death penalty. There really was.
Well,
and,
you could pull their charter. A state could pull a charter.
And it was until I think about 40 or 50 years ago that was still possible in some states like Wisconsin or Michigan or. You know, one of the Midwest states, I think, had it until the longest that it existed. I don't know about the 13 colonies. I don't know how they were set up. I think Dr. Bill O'Brien would be more familiar with that. But I know that there was a death penalty, and pulling the charter was it. But it was quite a process. To kill a corporation when it wasn't in the public interest, and it was supposed to be in the public interest. That was the intent at the outset. It was supposed to be presented as a means of collectively working for a commercial venture, working toward the betterment of the community. But it has gotten completely and utterly twisted and corrupted by avarice and power.
Quite likely. So, quite likely. Well, CL, thank you very kindly for your comments. We'll go around the room a little bit and hopefully. The conversation will be what the conversation is. Before we do that, however,
well, thank you, and thank you for allowing me to speak at such length. And I really, I hope you don't mind that I read that little piece in honor of Bernie that I wrote. And thank you for allowing me to do that.
Oh, no problem.
I appreciate that.
No problem at all. So it's about 5 minutes.
And
before.
I wish greetings to everybody out there who's listening, and I'll be probably listening to the re-airing of the conversation later because I've never done this before. So thanks ever so much.
Oh, you did just fine. You did just fine. And I appreciate you participating, and you're welcome. You're welcome just anytime. Stick around. You never know. You might want to chime in on something else. As I was saying, it's about 5 minutes before the hour, and I hate to mention it. I do. I despise mentioning it, but we live from month to month, and we are at $345 to go to close the week, and big old fundraising holes are a hell of a way to try to keep a radio network alive. We haven't heard from Clarity, and Clarity has sat patiently. Hey, Clarity.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kincaid.
Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon. You sound a little dark and stormy in your voice there. Been you breathing smoke?
It's starting to get to me. Just the gloominess of, you know, today it's a clear sky, but it's just gray. It's, you know, and it's been, well, you see my morning post. It's been like 2 weeks since it's been a real sunrise, you know.
This isn't the typical gray skies of the Northwest. No, this is something nasty.
Yeah, and then coupled with the, you know, the air quality, you know, the whole state's been under air quality alert now for on and off for the last week and a half. And it doesn't look like it's going to abate. There's no sign of any moisture anywhere coming this way. There's a little bit of wind today, so we're up to about 3 miles visibility. But even such, you know, it's that clear, unquote, it's not healthy to breathe the air. And I felt fortunate. I've been, you know, keeping myself in diva mode, following the Department of Health's advice to stay indoors as much as possible and to wear an N95 or a N100 mask, which I haven't seen in any of the stores. Those paper gauze masks that they give you at the hospital are totally inadequate. They let too much by, so I've been cautious. I did a gig yesterday, but I wore my mask just even carrying the equipment in and out of the club. You know, because I guess you're breathing a little bit deeper when you're carrying things and working.
At least the gig was not outdoors.
Oh, amen. I know there's some people, there's outdoor concerts in Portland, and I pity those poor guys, you know, that would, you know, have to work even, you know, just for one set, like a lunchtime gig or something, you know, in the Civic Center. Yeah, it's no place to be for any extended period of time. And I live on a route between the safety center and the hospital, and the emergency vehicle's been coming by, you know, about one every 2 or 3 hours. So, and I imagine most of them are people, you know, older people that
have respiratory distress. Yeah.
Yeah, the oxygen supply, well, actually they have two full-time people that do oxygen delivery and service around here. Town of 15,000. So, yeah, it's serious business. It's, you know, even in the best of circumstances, without those fires this time of year, at the end of the summer, it's real dusty here. And then, you know, tilling the wheat and pulling onions, you know, there's just a lot of dust in the air anyway. And then you start getting the inversions, fall inversion stuff. I mean, I bet Portland is just really nasty right now because it starts in September, you know, they start getting the hang over the city. So that smoke is really building up almost like it's got a urban heat island effect. So, yeah.
No, like I said, our buddy the Angry Indian said, Portland is still dark.
Yeah. Yeah, they're saying don't wipe your car off because the ashes will scrape your paint.
Yeah, it's an abrasive. I mean,
yes, exactly.
Were you still in the general area back in back when Mount St. Helens went up back in the 80s or late early 80s?
I was actually 50 miles south of here. My fiance at the time was going to school up there, and I couldn't get through on the phone to her for a couple of days. You know, back, you know, when it was all landlines,
Well, I was just wondering how the ash from these fires compares with the ash fallout from Mount St. Helens.
Somebody said it was like a light snowfall, so I would just say a dusting, where in Moses Lake they got almost 8 inches of ash.
Eight inches with which? The volcano?
From the volcano.
Yeah.
No, we've just gotten a dusting. You know, my car looks like it does after a full winter not getting washed. But it did get washed before this all started. So.
Like I said, you know, not to get all religious or anything, but it's just kind of creepy when all of this stuff piles up at one time, seemingly all over the planet.
Yes,
I just found out there's a typhoon bearing down on China that should hit next week. Formed up out in the middle of the Pacific, and it's. Gathering energy. Meanwhile, as far as the Caribbean's concerned, you know, learning all kinds of new terminology. The Atlantic Basin has generated more accumulated cyclone energy, ACE, today than any other day on record. And that's mainly because you've got Irma and Jose both holding pretty well steady at Cat 4. That says something. And
also accumulated energy also in the form of water vapor that dropped on Houston. They said it impacted the crust of the earth by 2 centimeters. So that's going to set up a wave of energy that's going to have to be released somewhere.
Well, let me interject something here. The water temperature, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but this is very interesting.
Steve.
The water temperature around the Keys is 90 freaking degrees. I don't even like my bath that warm, you know? And we wonder what's fueling these things.
Well, do we wonder? I thought we were the people who didn't wonder. I thought we kind of suspect.
We should wonder why these idiots are dismissing something that's been right in front of her face for the last 30 plus years.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like an asshole or anything, okay, but I'm willing to. I really wanted to see Rush Limbaugh lashed to a fucking palm tree, you know, right outside the Southern Command.
He's skedaddled, man.
Oh, he bugged right the hell out.
I thought it was a hoax, Bob. I thought Hurricane Irma was a hoax.
Well,
it's
a liberal hoax, my friend.
Rush Limbaugh said.
You know, it's a liberal hoax. Hand me another handful. I chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
He's an entertainer. He's an entertainer. He doesn't do the news. He doesn't do the weather. He's an entertainer.
It's not entertaining. Sorry, dude. You don't qualify if you're not entertaining, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's an entertainer. Does anybody really want to see Rush Limbaugh tap dance?
And by the way, he farts out his mouth.
We have not had a report yet from Scott and Punky on whether or not they have gotten around to watching The Big Lebowski yet. But I was reminded of that simply because I was going to say for those of us who are not Lebowski virgins, for those of us who are familiar with the film. When he finally goes to see his landlord's interpretive dance piece, Big Lebowski viewers, anybody? Billable Rick, Steve from Georgistan. I mean, I know if we had him on the front porch, Steve from New York would go, oh, yeah, that. That's kind of what I think about when I think about Rush Limbaugh, the entertainer. But... Well, people who know Lebowski will know what I'm talking about. Otherwise, it's kind of a waste
of
reference.
Bob, I I must admit, I've only catched bits and snatches of that movie. I have never seen the whole thing, as far as I know. So I'm also a Lebowski virgin, but I know of the movie.
Kill the heretic. Kill the heretic.
Enough of it to know what it's like. I know. You're gonna have to send me a link so I can educate myself on how to watch it.
Well, if you've got HBO to go, it's right there.
Oh well, I've got Netflix, and you know, I don't know if it's on that. I've got Amazon Prime as well, so
$3 Amazon Prime, Rick. Come on, you got $3 to spare, bro.
Okay. Yes, after all, I'm billable, right? So I've got to be able to spend some money on that, huh?
You can write it off your taxes as an educational.
Right, you got money, Rick.
Yeah, same thing with Godfather, because everything you ever needed to learn about life and business is in The Godfather, essentially, you know, and politics as well. So, okay, yeah, I guess I have to do that. But, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't follow your reference there, Bob, so what can I say?
Well, let's just put it this way. Imagine, when we think of Rush Limbaugh entertainer, just think of Jabba the Hutt in tap shoes.
There you go. Or how about that dude that was I love that song that you played with your buddy in Australia, or he sang it. That was a wonderful song. Last night's program, the guy who was in the rubber suits and stuff.
Yeah. Pastor,
so I guess
from
that
Montgomery.
Would be, I could imagine Rush in that outfit, maybe, you know. Maybe that's the kind of entertainment that, you know, he
my
could provide.
Friends, this just goes to show the perversion of the liberal wackadoodles.
Yeah, right. Asa tells me don't be ragging on Limbaugh, man. He's a conscientious objector.
Right, he had what, bunions, or what did he have, or something in his ass, or
Limbaugh had a pilonidal cyst. I'm not going to talk about it on air. I'm not going to take the program into the gutter. You can just look it up. Just reading about it is like, ow. And now
Google,
we've got YouTube,
Google
you can probably
you'll lose lunch, man.
I was going to say, now you can probably just look it up and go, oh, God damn, why?
I'll post something in the chat on the side of the Skype, okay?
You'll never unsee it.
Really, I mean, you've been freaking warned, okay? Got another great note from Steve on the Gulf Coast. Subject line, storm drain. I got to say, we do live in interesting times. Never thought I'd live to see three major hurricanes triple bashing the entire North American storm zone simultaneously. It actually looks like an artist's conception of life. Maybe on Jupiter? Can't sling a cat without it getting sucked into a Category 4. One word, wow. Yeah, it does. There was an image, the image that I was talking about that I saw last night, that's got them sort of just lined up across the Caribbean basin. And damned if it didn't look like a Van Gogh. You know, maybe Starry Night, only it's hurricanes. Maybe that's another reference that isn't going to work. But, you know, there you go. Any good concerts this weekend, Rick?
This weekend, no, actually not, but I got a bunch next weekend. I've got Friday night, Hall & Oates and Tears for Fears. It's rescheduled from the summer. And then I have Green Day on, Saturday night, Saturday night. And then I think the following week, I got a couple of Petty concerts to go to. He's playing at the Hollywood Bowl. So I think I'm going to probably sell my tickets that are not together. I got like tickets at the last moment, which were like in the same row, but like 20 seats apart. So I'm going to have to sell those and just go to the one Petty show. So that's pretty much it. Then I want to go see the Scorpions on October 7th at the LA Forum. They're playing with Megadeth. And then Al Stewart, of course, is going to be in I think San Juan Capistrano.
Oh,
like
no
November
kidding. Yeah, this
22nd.
Is the tour. Yeah, this is the anniversary, or maybe, is it? Yeah, this is the anniversary tour for Year of the Cat.
Oh,
and so
40-year anniversary.
And
yeah.
He's playing the whole album.
Yeah.
Damn.
You told me.
I wish
you
I could get out
me
there.
Out of that, Bob. You should. You could do some programs out here. Do like a roving, you know, the roving show, you know, as you travel across the country, you know.
Yeah, it's that would be a blast. I'd love to see that. And I wonder if he's going to have the whole, you know, because when he originally toured behind that with that album, he had the quintessential typical late 70s humongous stadium show, you know, drummer, bass player, two or three keyboard players, a couple of guitar players, you know, band. And most of the time when he plays now, it's just him and another guy named Dave Nachmanoff, who is a brilliant guitar player. I don't know, but it would be something to see.
Yeah, my guess, Bob, is that it's probably not going to be a real scaled up show. I mean, it's at a small, like, you know, kind of a concert club, you know, dinner club, supper club / concert club. So I'd be surprised if he had more than a few pieces. It'd be nice if he did, but either way, you know, I mean, it's the, you know, it's his voice and the music, you know.
Yeah. That would be something to see.
You mentioned
Green Day. I guess my youngest is going to, I don't know, I guess they're playing Albuquerque or something, and she's going to go and she's going to make a left turn at Albuquerque and see Green Day sometime soon.
Oh, very good, very good. Maybe she'll see the Roadrunner there or whatever, you know.
Here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams you can eat. Yep.
There you go. Yeah. So any update on the hurricane? It looks like it's not going to be quite as devastating because it sort of veered a little bit to the west, and it's going to, a lot of it's going to be absorbed by the Everglades, which is really just a bunch of water, not really land so much.
Well,
you know?
Before they fucked up the Everglades so thoroughly, but yeah.
Oh.
The barrier islands, you know, for instance, Miami Beach, and the Everglades are kind of a, you know, they evolved as sort of a storm absorption device, and you run into trouble when you try to put people there. But
right.
Hell, Rick, the forecast changes every 6 hours, so what you're seeing now, it'll be different come 11 o'clock tonight, and then 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Oh, and the jargon, well, you know. We're waiting for the wobble. We're waiting for the wobble.
Waiting for the European model. It's going to be coming out any minute now, you know. But I guess the European model is more accurate. At least that's what I've heard.
A friend of mine was a meteorologist, and he said, "Steve, if you want to compare what you're trying to predict where one of these things is going to go, fill up your bathtub full of water. Drop a ping pong ball in the middle of the bathtub, predict where it's going to go." He says, that's about how much accuracy we have.
Well, you know, it's actually gotten a lot more accurate, you know, in the last...
This has been years ago, so outdated information.
I mean, I was reading an article, I think it was in the New Yorker, and it was talking about the, you know, the hurricane prediction skills that we have now, and... we've gotten one day more precise in our advanced forecast, like in just the last 10 years. Like, in other words, the 5 day forecast now is as accurate as the 4 day forecast was like 10 years ago, you know, just because there's much more information, much more metrics out there to, you know, to input. And, you know, they just have had more experience with, you know, forecasting and what have you. So it's actually pretty accurate. And then they have those hurricane planes that, fly into the hurricane and, you know, through the eye and what have you. And
I caught an interview with that guy, or with one of the guys. He's a colonel who flies into it. He said, "Believe you me," he said, "I've been on the ground for him, and I've been in him in an airplane. I'd rather be in the airplane."
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. Wow. And they get jostled around like crazy there, you know, with those hurricanes, you know.
Yeah, and an aircraft, I don't like minor turbulence, okay? I freak out when the wheels go up. So, no.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. Well, it's good that we had that caller from the 206 code. Is she from Seattle, or where is she exactly? Seattle, I think?
Yeah, I think she's in the greater Seattle area. I won't speak for her, though.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I thought I recognized the area code because I had an IRS case where that was the number of the IRS agent handling the case. So, I mean, for a client, it wasn't my own case. How long have those fires been going in the Northwest, Bob?
Probably better to ask Clarity or CL.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess
I mean,
they
started. I think Clarity told us they started with some little asshole using, you know, setting off fireworks. Was that it, Clarity?
So it's been going on 2 months then, or?
I don't know.
It is. Yeah, while we're waiting for them, we had a little fire in our neck of the woods, not too far from where I am in Burbank.
Was it called the Latuna Fire?
Yeah, Latuna Canyon. Yeah, they closed off an entire freeway that I usually use to get to my house that goes east-west along the foothills. And, yeah, I saw pictures of people trying to drive on there, and it was pretty crazy.
Is that under control now? Because it looked pretty ugly.
Yeah, you know, they got it under pretty good control within about, like, 2 to 3 days. So we got very little, you know, I could see, from where I live, like up on the hills, I could see, look down and see the flames at night and the red moon. It was really weird. You know, there was a huge plume of smoke, you know, emanating from the fire. It creates its own atmospheric pattern, its own pyroclastic cloud or whatever, its own it's on cumulonimbus cloud, except there's no water in it. You know, it's all dried. And, yeah, I mean, that basically was knocked down within about 2 or 3 days, as far as, you know, you could only see little puffs of smoke after 2 or 3 days. So it was pretty, you know, they got to it pretty quick. They made sure they weren't going to let it go out of control like the one in 2009 did, which seemed like it burned half of L.A. County.
Well, in Southern California, you got more roads and you just have more people there to fight the fires than we do up here. And in a lot of areas, it's wilderness where there aren't, you know, good roads and infrastructure. You know, the nearest town only has maybe 200 or 300 people. And, you know, just a lot of things that keep things from getting set up real fast. But as far as the fires go, the fire that was set tragically this week in the Columbia Gorge was set by a 15-year-old boy from Vancouver, Washington. But as far as fires go, in British Columbia, they've had a fire going there since late July. And then in Montana, they've had fires going now for almost 2 months. So it's all over the whole Northwest.
Yeah, it seems like the drought, you know, kind of moved from California and migrated northward. I mean, that's the sense I get. I mean, you know, if droughts really migrate, you know.
The biologists and geologists said that the climate moves 10 years or, yeah, 10 miles a year. The climate shifts north far as so 10 years ago, you're having the same climate as 100 miles south of you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would make it San Diego, which is pretty good climate. I would take that any day. Just ask Scott and Bunky.
Well, when you consider San Francisco, the first time, you know, they've had temperatures above 100 pretty much have been in the last 5 or 6 years, you know. That's not enough in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it used to never get above like 80 for, you know, any time during the summer there.
Obviously, the Pacific, that upwelling that's kept them cool historically, obviously the Western Pacific must be warming up considerably too.
Well, I think you mean the Eastern, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Dyslexia.
And probably the Western as well, for all we know. Look at the monsoons that they're getting, right?
They are in Southeast, the Kettle Fire in Brookings, which is right on the California border on the coast, they say that's the largest fire in Oregon right now.
Jeez.
And it's huge, and they say it'll burn probably until rainy season starts.
Wow.
So they'll never get it under control.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not good.
And there's kind of a, in the modern era, Clarity, there's kind of a difference between until rainy season starts and if rainy season starts.
Yes, yeah. Well, last year we got quite a bit of rain in the fall. But the thing that makes this season bad also is that we had so much moisture last winter, and there's just extra amount of fuel in the fires, so that, you know, they just burn hotter and bigger, you know, and harder than where if you have a dry winter, you don't have as much the connecting vegetation between the trees, and the trees that are quote unquote fire resistant have a better chance of getting through it and the fire not spreading as fast. So there's other factors, you know, on top of that, we've had dry weather for a decade in the West.
Yeah, we really have, for sure. You know, I mean, it's, California, maybe it started in California and it seems to have gone north, you know. You guys have had some bad fires. I mean, I remember maybe 2-3 summers ago, they made it sound like half the state of Oregon was on fire.
Well, it was.
Or maybe it was Washington as well.
That was in the eastern part of the state.
Okay.
Of course, Greg Walden, blamed it on, we just didn't do enough cutting. And if we would have got the timber cut before it burned, then it wouldn't have burned. And, you know, it's the same old point the finger and say, oh, we got too many tree huggers in the Forest Service and this and that. And in a way, we have been conservative and we haven't been aware of, fire management to the point, we preserve things and we leave too much
deadwood, I guess.
Yeah, too much deadwood. But the logging companies don't want to go in and do salvage or thinning. They want to clear cut everything they can, right, because that's right, the most economical.
They want it all, right, Clarity?
Yeah, well, it's subsidized. They're not making a profit. They wouldn't do it unless the roads were subsidized and all this stuff is put up by the feds and these things. And the communities, don't mind that things are overlogged because there's a few jobs there.
Yeah, yeah. Until they're not.
Clarity. When you make that reference, you got to say jobs.
Yeah. Well, and when the mill closes, the only people that are left are the people, the ranchers, and a few people that are there that are, drawing Social Security. But there's no way for anybody to start there. There's in those small communities, you just cannot start there. There's not enough infrastructure there to start a family. So those communities are dying. A lot of these small communities are just getting, just shrinking away to nothing. And because of that, and of course, Walden and his constituents don't want to even put in the type of transportation system that would enhance some of the local economies.
Is he your governor, or who is Walden?
Walden is number 3 or 4 in the U.S. House of Representatives. Oregon,
okay.
2. Yeah, okay. He's the one that you don't see very much, but he's just as evil as Paul Ryan and the whole cast. But he, he's a Christian broadcaster and a good, clean, small businessman.
Businessman, you mean, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But he's somehow managed to not talk or sound like he's from Kentucky, but he's pretty much, give me that old-time religion and no sex education in the schools and all that stuff,
I gotcha. Looks like we got somebody from the 323 area code, Bob. Is that Silent R. Lamar?
Yeah, that's Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Lamar.
Go ahead.
Yep. I'm just listening. You guys are talking over my head right now. I don't know anything about what y'all are talking about. Joke. And just nobody laughs at my joke anymore. God.
Well, the cowbell standard has gone up a little bit. I mean,
See, that's what I get for not attending like I should, right?
You can blame it on the hormones.
Okay, okay, I'll take that. Thank you. Go ahead.
We can be kind of a rough crowd, Silent R.
I'm noticing that. I'm still a rookie. I understand. I'll take my lumps where they come. Yeah, like you guys were talking about earlier. I mean, it's just too much. This is too much out there to get involved in. Because like earlier, with the guy, the lady from Seattle area, and the Michael Bennett stuff. And then you talking about Clarity, and I heard about Clarity's guy up there in Oregon. That guy is a real character. Because I remember when he made that statement, if we had to thinned out the forest or cut the trees down, we wouldn't have had the fires. And I'm up here saying, well, if you had employed the forestry department like you used to, they would have cleared the brush out.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many forests that just have so many dead trees in it, and, you know.
Yeah, especially with the insect infestation. Yeah, the tussock moth, and, yeah, gypsy moth. Yeah, there's a lot of dead timber out there standing, yeah.
And, you know, the government's been so hollowed out with, you know, cuts in spending and sequestration, and so little is paid to, you know, the Forest Service and National Park Service and so forth, and you know, well, we're spending gobs of money on other stuff like the military, you know.
Well, even with the subsidies, we can't compete with British Columbia, you know, how cheaply they can get their cut out. They subsidize more than we do, and if there's not the demand, you know, it's just, it's not the cut that they're, you know, it's too much to give away for little return. Maybe now, as they're starting to build houses again, maybe the demand for timber will go up. But, you know, you have to also include that Siberia is, you know, clear-cutting the whole damn, you know, Russia is cutting a lot of wood. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to compete against other resource-extracting countries, you know?
Yep.
Well, like I said, you can just thank Reagan. Go ahead.
Oh, I just, this is CL from the Washington area, and I wanted to ask Clarity a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, you, I think we're calling in soon after the Eagle Creek fire started. Did you hear how that fire started, how it began?
The story I've heard, and I think from enough sources that it's probably true, was there was a couple teenage boys throwing firecrackers off of a cliff because it had a nice ring echo, and one of the firecrackers hit in the bough of a tree, and it just went up like a Roman candle, and that's how the fire
right
started. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and I heard the same. And did you hear how they responded when they acknowledged that they were the ones who started it, and they were laughing about it? They thought it was a hoot, and it is just devastating. It jumped the gorge and go from you know, it's like in both states of Oregon and Washington now, and I know our governor has called a state of emergency for Washington State.
Well, maybe it was the goddess of irony a little bit that the fireworks were probably bought in Washington State, and they're highly, you know, they're against the law in Oregon to shoot off that type of fireworks any time of the year, or even on the 4th of July, and that it jumped back across the river. I mean, I don't want any part of the gorge to be burned up like it's being burned up, but I thought it was ironic that at the Bridge of the Gods, it jumped back across, you know, there at Carson Stevenson. And I hope it doesn't get into the Gifford Pinchot Forest.
Did I hear from a week or so ago that you had actually spent some time in the Eagle Creek area?
I lived in Vancouver for 12 years, way back in the day. So I've traipsed up and down there, Crown Point. And I lived in Gresham for a year. So yeah, that was home for a period of my life.
That's heartbreaking.
Oh, it is, and that's what I was just saying. I haven't taken it all in between the gloom of being trapped in my house, because I kind of cope with my depression by getting exercise, and I can't really do too much. And then the fact that the most beautiful place is between here and Portland. And over the next year, I'm going to have to be going back and forth, you know, for treatments. So I'm going to have to see that scar, you know.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Clarity. I've been wondering about that for the last week or so, and so thank you for answering that for me. I didn't want to step on Lamar's time, so I'll go back into mute.
You're not stepping on any of those.
I think we're meant to feel those things.
I am gonna shift gears and move the topic over for just a second, simply to share something with y'all that might provide a little bit of some happy. I don't know if you've seen this or heard it yet, but apparently there is a trend developing of trolling the little Alex Jones asshats. And so there was a protest of some sort in Austin, and of course, you know, Alex Jones is in Austin, and he sent one of his little minions out with a camera and a microphone to, you know, interview people. The video starts with him interviewing some guy in an Indivisible t-shirt, which means that person is probably, you know, sort of liberal progressive oriented, I would guess. In the background, you can see, I don't know, a sign that appears, I think, to say, make Trump vegan. Yeah, okay, cool. But then the guy turns and interviews a child who is obviously a cisgendered female child, and the following hilarity ensues.
How are you, young man?
You're an idiot.
Wow, who taught you that language?
My mother.
So your mother taught you that foul language?
In the car.
And why am I an idiot? Oh, wow. Oh, my.
And so she calls. He's just walked up to a little girl and said, how are you, young man? And I'm sorry about the audio quality. Don't blame me. Don't blame me for Alex Jones's audio quality. Sorry. That's pretty much the extent of the clip. How are you, young man? You're a fucking idiot. Oh, wow. Where did you learn to use such foul language? From my mother, in the car. and if that's the case, if mother said, now, sweetheart, if you see one of these assholes from InfoWars or Alex Jones, make sure and call him a fucking idiot. You know, because, baby, this world has fucking idiots in it, and you're one. So that happened, and okay. So you know you're a little InfoWars turd, and you get called what you are, a fucking idiot, and that's the end of it, right? No. Not with these assholes. Now they're going after. I wish I was kidding. They're going. The guy who got called a fucking idiot got back into the studio, you know, there where they where they hustle the what is it, paleo chicken bone chocolate energy drink or whatever it is. Oh, by the way, have you tried OMG Okra? OMG Okra will make you feel like the most advanced human being since the advent of agriculture. OMG Okra, just for you. Start your day the right way with OMG Okra from the Horn. Horn Laboratories. So this Timothy Johnson creep goes back into the studio, and then this.
The thing that really shocked me, because I'm telling you, all my friends are seeing this now. Like, this clip, for whatever reason, has reached the stratosphere more than anything I've ever done, more than even maybe possibly Aid Skrillex. And they're all saying, oh, of course, they understand that this girl obviously didn't defeat me in any debate. But it's just the left is literally lifting this girl up as a hero. And it's just really sad to me. I mean, that's, and then they're making fun of me like, oh, Owen Schroyer was so shocked when he heard that. Yeah, that's shocking.
Yeah, it's shocking when you're a fucking idiot and a 12-year-old kid tells you you're a fucking idiot. It's shocking. Shocking. No, really. The guy has been, because you got to understand, these are right-wing turds, and everything gets sexualized with them. His manhood has been called into question by somebody he thought was a guy in the first place, but was actually pretty obviously a cisgendered little girl. You fucking idiot. And then flips him off. It was a beautiful thing. They didn't, of course, show him being called a fucking idiot again. But so Timothy Johnson, oh, really, has had his manhood questioned. And, well, Alex Jones is not going to let that go. He's not going to let his honor be besmirched. Because there's all kinds of smirching. And you can't, once the smirching starts, how are you ever going to stop it? So here then, Alex Jones.
Play a little short clip. And Owen came in here during the break and he said, man, Alex, what's it like to be attacked? I've never been attacked in hundreds of newspapers in one day like you are now. Bro, they've got technicians and corporate guys that put out the talking points. They saw that in the last 2 weeks, you, Millie, and some of the new crew, let's not exaggerate, 25 million views just on our platforms, and everybody else copied the videos because we let everybody do it. But we just want the info out. So all the people that hate us make money off of us, getting little clips and editing them together of little kids coming up and cussing and all the hateful left. So they're attacking because simultaneously they've stolen your identity, they've stolen your work, they're making money off of you, and they're pissed that you go out there and you're a good-looking, sharp, smart guy and show their zombie hordes. So they've got to project it back and go, it's rock star to have 9-year-old girls talking like they're John Belushi on PCP.
Really? Like John Belushi on PCP? You're a fucking idiot now qualifies as talking like John Belushi on PCP. What a little snowflake.
It's great that they can't talk. It's great that they're dumb. It's great that they're hateful and stupid. It's great Antifa's crapping on everyone. They've got to turn that around and act like, it's like Media Matters takes our most powerful truths and puts them out twisted to act like they're the boss. Going, look at this kookiness. Jones says that water's wet.
No, Jones says there are jellyfish monkey hybrids for sale in Hong Kong. That's what Jones says. And, you know, I'm sorry. It's a little kooky.
It's about an authority. It's about a con game about who you can have on and who you can talk to, Owen. Let's play a clip of this young lady last weekend in Austin.
How are you, young man?
You're an idiot.
Wow, who taught you that language?
My mother.
So your mother taught you that foul language?
In the car.
And why am I an idiot? Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
And then flicks off the camera.
Looks like about a 9-10-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Well, at least you can recognize that she's a girl, Alex. That's how the whole thing started when dipshit over there said, how are you, young man?
And I said,
she already, you know, acts basically like a, just like some thug woman. Yeah, I got Inca tattoos on my arms. Yeah, yeah.
Really? Really? Some thug woman and immediately does a Northeast accent. Okay. Like I said, I just wanted to provide the group a little bit of fun there. Are we all having a good time now?
Just, yeah. Loads and loads of fun, Bob. We're rolling in the aisles here.
And he's...
And he, even,
my face is...
And you know, he's great. Talking about, hey, liberal gatekeepers are out there making millions. Okay, well, we're not. We're just pointing out that you guys are, that you know, the InfoWars crowd are a bunch of... Oh, wait. Well, you know, you can't improve on perfection. They're fucking idiots. Millionaire idiots, but idiots just the same.
stupidity has no social boundaries, Bob.
No. And it's allowed to wander free in public in our so-called civil society. So, yeah. There you go. I have a message for you, by the way, Steve. And maybe this will prove helpful.
I hope so.
Brother Deacon Asa, back when you were talking generators, Brother Deacon Asa, who knows about these things, said, Champion is rolling garbage. Get you a Honda.
No kidding. Maybe that's why they cost half the price as Hondas. Okay, duly noted. And thank you, Deacon Asa.
So, I mean, I'm taking that to heart, too. It's just that, you know, you pay 2-3 times as much.
Right. And I'm on a, my budget is not limitless. Let's just say that, you know.
Right. I mean, are you really, I'm looking at the map, and I'm not criticizing you, okay, Steve? Are you really expecting to lose power out of this?
Bob, my grid is similar to your grid, okay?
Toothpicks in the trees?
Situation. Yes. Put yourself in my situation and ask yourself the same question. If you were under the same scenario that I was, knowing that you're going to have 50 to 70 plus mile an hour sustained winds for over 12 hours.
I mean, you really think it's going to be 70 mile an hour winds when it gets to you? I mean, I'm not criticizing.
You know where I live. Go to weather.com or AccuWeather, put in my zip code, and look at it. I'm not making this up, man.
Well, I'm looking. In fact, I'm going right now. I'm going to the source. National Hurricane Center. And I'm just looking up the map.
It looks pretty benign.
But
you have to understand that the strongest point is to that right quadrant, which after Ivan, you know, I'm not going to take any chances.
How bad was Ivan for you there?
We had 40 mile an hour sustained winds with gusts up to about 60. And we only lost power for a couple of days. It wasn't that big of a deal, but this seems to be Ivan times two.
Oh, this thing's bigger than, this thing's bigger than Andrew, so, you know.
Right. And it was like somebody was saying in the chat room earlier, this may even affect you, Bob, the way it's tracking.
At it now, it's not going to touch me.
Well, I hope not.
The supposed cone extends sort of.
They have these finger bands, you know, like when Katrina came through. It was in Louisiana, but they were still spinning off tornadoes here in the North Georgia Mountains because the finger bands extend way out past the actual storm itself.
I mean, the hurricane watch now extends pretty much all the way up the peninsular part of Florida. Just south of Jacksonville on the.
Then it's a tropical storm, and then when you get past Atlanta, it turns into a depression. But that's been fluctuating all day. They keep going. Yesterday at around 5 o'clock, they had the North Georgia Mountains where I was at a Cat 1 hurricane level. I don't think they know, Bob. I really don't.
Yeah, they've got you at depression levels and. According to the National Hurricane Center at NOAA, they define that at wind speed less than 39 miles an hour. But again, right. if your grid is anything like mine, the last big power outage we had here for 2 or 3 days was
that was
less than 1 minute of 60 mile an hour winds.
Exactly, that's my point. And you know my zip code because I've sent you enough email and stuff. Look at it. It's not pretty, man. I don't know if they do that to scare people to go out and buy generators. If so, I'm falling right into their evil plan. You know, I asked Karen, how many D batteries do we got? She said, at least 50.
Steve, I think you should send an email to Rush Limbaugh and ask him if he should buy a generator. He can tell you. Yeah. He knows that all about that shit.
That compound, he's probably got one backwired into his power supply, Rick, that automatically comes on when he loses power.
Probably, yeah.
And he's still skedaddled, you know?
Yeah, what a wimp. Why wasn't he going to ride it out? Come on, man. Practice what you preach, you know?
Yeah, put your money where your mouth is. Do you expect anything less from that weasel?
No, of course not. Look what he did. He basically avoided the war because he had basically assist on his ass, you know?
I posted a picture of that early, a very tame picture. Yeah, I've already took it down, you know, because like I said, I don't want to ruin everybody's evening, and that's hard to unsee.
Well, it's dinner time. It's dinner time, too, for some of the folks on the East Coast, so there you go.
Like I feel about Russ is like this. Anybody who sends his maid out to get his drugs, do you really trust him? Staying around to be a man or something? Really?
Yeah, he's going to throw his maid under the bus. I mean, yeah, what a stand-up guy, man. That fucker. Sorry, Bob.
Well, you used be a man and Limbaugh in the same sentence, so that automatically makes it a sort of oxymoron. Oxymoron. Yeah, I'm giving myself a cowbell. Yeah,
I thought of that as well, Bob. Give one for me, too.
Okay. All right, and be a man. We'll dole out a cowbell for Rush Limbaugh and being a man in the same sentence. Okay.
So. Bob, when you made the statement about the painting of the hurricanes, when I saw the map this morning, it looked like planes coming into LAX. Okay, the way they were lined up, coming toward Florida. That's what they look like, because I've never seen three or that many in a row waiting to hit land.
Well, that's what the headline said. No one has ever seen that. That has not happened in the recorded history of being able to chart hurricanes. So it's not.
Go ahead.
No, you.
No, I was going to say, what do these people really need to understand that human beings are contributing to the reaction of the atmosphere and everything else? Because, I had one gentleman who was talking about he was trying to deny man-had effect on climate. I said, okay, I took a fishbowl and took a cigarette. I said, okay, then you multiply 1,000 or a million people in a small area, and I stuck the cigarette at the mouth of the jar upside down. When it filled up with smoke, I told him, this is how Los Angeles used to be in the 60s and before we had the Clean Air Act. Because, see, I suffered from asthma, which was triggered from the smog. And it was a bitch walking around with that little inhaler that you have to shoot yourself with if you have an attack. And it's to me, air quality, how can you want to live in a place where the air is deadly? How are you going to survive? And like I've said to a lot of people, man is the only animal that I know of that will pee and poop in its food. No animal out there pees in the river, but a man go out there and pee in the water that he drinks.
Now, come on, fish pee in that. That's why Fields hated to drink water. That's why I only drank liquor.
Do you really? Okay, I give them a little love way with them dropping their dung in the fish bowl. I understand that. But one thing about it goes straight to the bottom, and it biodegrades, and it feeds.
And the shrimp eat it, and then shrimp are yummy.
Okay, I don't want to follow that one. Okay,
sorry.
I know when I'm outclassed.
I mean, same with catfish. I mean, oysters. You know, just saying.
Yeah.
I get your point. But look, you know, you're not dealing with rational people. Okay, it's like something I pointed out a couple of nights ago in conversation. You've got a group of people who will say, what? Human beings affect the climate? Impossible. What? Gays cause earthquakes? Yeah. Absolutely. Wrath of God. That's who you're dealing with. That's who you're dealing with. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I had one of those guys one day too, and I simply asked him, "Can you show me a plastic bag tree?" And then he said, "There's no such thing as a plastic bag tree." I said, "Well, if you hadn't learned anything about chemistry and stuff like that, you know the bio or the chemicals that come that are immersed or released when chemicals and stuff are combined. That is the pollution that they're talking about that you can't see. That is one case. That is what you can't see will kill you." And like you had mentioned once before, they're talking about you have to look at the location of these industrial places. They're never in the rich man's area or backyard.
No. And I don't know if you saw the stories or not, but EPA was MIA. For all of the Superfund sites in Houston, some of which were really, really nasty places that were 5, 6, 8 feet underwater, and so God only knows. And the benzene count, which is not a good thing to be breathing, the benzene count was off the damn charts. When the acceptable level is something like 24 parts per billion, it was up in the 300 range. But Scott Pruitt says now this is not the time to talk about climate change. Well, okay, is it the time to talk about crippling an EPA that was MIA on Superfund sites? Is this we've got to make sure we get water and fuel to people. No, this isn't the time.
Well, like I say, as far as I'm concerned with the Republicans, they are the party of dismantle. They will take stuff apart that we need to have in place, and then they wonder why. Well, they don't wonder why it doesn't work, because they make sure it doesn't work so they can go back and say, see, this is why you don't need government. Because, I mean, the poop that they're doing is just off the chart, man. I mean, like, wasn't Rick Perry governor at the time when that place blew up, that fertilizer place blew up?
Yeah, in West Texas, yeah.
Yeah. And then they had the same problem with his guy and him fought those, super slush or whatever those things they call it, where they had dumped the chemicals or super.
Superfund.
You just said it, and I can't.
Yeah, Superfund.
Yeah, Superfund. They fought that tooth and nail. And then all of a sudden they get Harvey and it becomes a problem. And they're like, we didn't know this was going to happen. Type of attitude. And I'm like, dude, I don't understand why Republicans keep putting people in office who do not care about them. And maybe, Bob, you can tell me, since you are a good historian, which president who made the statement that he didn't like bankers and the people, merchants, because they had no loyalty to the country? I don't know. I thought it was Lincoln or somebody in that, but he didn't like carpetbaggers or banksters or whatever because their loyalty that they have was to the money, and they would sell the United States out as quick as they could.
I don't know. There are so many fake quotes that you see on memes out there that you really do have to double check just about every one you see, unless it's something that you know from past practice to be real. FDR referred to the same sort of people and said, "I welcome their hate."
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Lincoln, a lot of stuff, you know, from Lincoln back to Jefferson, Madison, and Adams and Washington, there's a lot of made up shit that they you know. Because okay. if you ask one of those fraud merchants like David Barton, who just sort of makes up history on the fly, he'll tell you that that Thomas Jefferson said everybody needs to have a close personal relationship with their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and attend a Southern Baptist church. He'll tell you that. One of his books was so full of lies that his publisher actually pulled it and refused to publish it because it was just a tissue paper thin catalog of freaking lies. So you've got that.
Chock-a-block.
Yeah, just a few minutes left. I want to pass along a couple more things on generators because this may be helpful to people. Brother Deacon Asa says, I completely agree on the price point of the Honda. However, I do have a Champion, and I can tell you a thing or ten about having it. But having said that, the gas-propane combo is bitchin'. On the other hand, Keith points out, we got a Honda generator in 2005 after Rita. It ran almost 24 hours a day for 6 weeks. Had to fuel every 12 hours. Ran like a champ. Still good and strong today. Still use it when the grid goes down. Spend the money now if you can. It is worth it in the long run. So that's, you know, that's the Horn Family Community Congregation trying to make sure that the best possible available information is out there. And
well,
so
many thanks to everybody who's weighed in.
Yeah, and Steve, I hope it's not as bad as you expect it to be. I really hope.
Yeah, I hope not as well. But whatever it is, you know, whatever, you know,
I'm
singing the Beatles song, Let It Be.
I'm worried to pieces about our friends in South Florida, even the ones that don't speak to us anymore. You know, because we were we're insufficiently ideologically pure. We've got friends in the Horn Family Community Congregation all over Florida from Tallahassee southward. And if you're down there and you're not getting out, please check in and let us know you're okay, because it looks like it's gonna start really getting interesting over the weekend. It's listed as a major hurricane as far into as 2 p.m. Sunday. 2 a.m. Sunday, it'll be at the Keys. It'll be apparently on over South Florida in earnest by 2 p.m. on Sunday. And it's a hurricane warning as far north as Tampa Bay. And then it's a hurricane watch up into, you know, up around Dixie and Levy County and all along in there, places I wouldn't know about if I hadn't read all the John D. MacDonald novels, you know, Travis McGee. Still great pulp reading. So we'll get out of here and be back for more on Monday. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in. Thanks for coming and playing CL in Seattle. And good to hear from you, Silent R. Lamar. Thank you, Clarity, for your input. Billable Rick, thank you. Enjoy your rocking and rolling weekend. And Steve from Georgia, stay safe and stay dry. And know, everybody that's in the path of this thing, know that you are in our thoughts. If we prayed, we'd pray, but I don't pray. Sorry. But I do think, and I think good things. So I guess, depending on what happens with the overnight crew between now and Monday, we will begin Monday in a reverb-inducing hole at something on the order of, there we are with the ciphering again. Oh, math death. Yeah. 545 bucks. So hopefully it'll be down to at least 500 bucks. But that's going to be rough to crawl out of. Our buddy Mark, down that way, says, gonna ride her out. Strap in. But you know, you got to trust people to be experts in their own lives. Be well, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you in the chat room. It was great to see Sparky wandering by. Thanks again to Midweek Utility. Pinch hit sort of, okay, you're not a pinch hitter anymore. You're more like a designated hitter. Designated hitter, chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and @ Coal River MTN on Twitter. Follow them on Facebook and Twitter.
Remember, use smile.amazon.com and nominate Cold River Mountain Watch to receive your contributions, and a little bit of every purchase will go to help in the ongoing human rights struggle in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye now.